talking about it. We're talking about it.
The midterm elections. Who will win? Who will not?
One question about the 2026 races is already answered.
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Campaign 2026.
This is where the fun begins.
Every step, every day.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local. Dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
We're here for public forum.
Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
All right, we'll go back to case 2026-8-CU. Walmart Stores East, represented by Shahzad Mahmood, 3700 block of Gulf Breeze Parkway. It's in a planned business district. It's a conditional use request to allow public and private utilities, specifically a telecommunications tower within a PBD.
My name's Shahzad Mahmood. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak in front of you all today. I work with Kim Lee Horn. Kim Lee Horn was hired by SBA Communications as well as Walmart as a result of a need that they found for wireless communications coverage and capacity.
So nothing gets people excited about local government like finding out that somebody wants to put a tower in their backyard or near them anywhere in the vicinity. As you heard, this was at the zoning board, the Santa Rosa County, and the question was, what would they do with the request to build a 150-foot communications tower, which is different from, for example, a powered radio tower? Just FYI, it's something that not a lot... You know, the more I listen to government, PJ, the more I think, you know, there's a lot of things that people do not know, and they get upset because of what they don't know.
Right.
And it's kind of... it's understandable... On the one hand, but it's also like, you know, learn more about what's going on. Now, I don't know if any of the people who showed up who were going to be upset about this, I know. We'll tell you why that didn't matter in a minute. But when you hear there's a tower going up anywhere close to you, people assume the worst. And the worst would be like a giant 50,000-watt or 25,000-watt powered radio broadcast tower. Now, we love radio. We just don't love it right next to our house. But, because you know these things, is there a difference between, let's say, a 10,000-watt powered radio tower and a tower that you build only for the purpose of holding up in the air a cell communications site? And the answer
is... Yes, there is.
Massive difference. One, if you touch it, you die. The other, if you touch it, nothing happens because it's not powered. It's not on. There's no giant electricity running through it. It's literally just a platform on which you can place these cell sites. Like, for example, on the water tower, you know, the water tower that's across from the Walmart. When you go up to Garcon Point Road, Garcon Point Bridge, you pass that big water tower and it's got cell sites on top of it. You can see the antenna, right? Do you think that the water tower is powered? It's not electrified. It's not on. And that's the point. But you don't know. Because, you don't know. I've lived next to a radio tower, and I remember it was not great. You know, it would interfere with the operation of my DVD, and you could hear the radio station on my phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because that's, like, that's what they do. You know, the powered towers interfere with you locally. And I remember, you know, there if you own a radio station like that or a radio antenna like that, you're actually obligated by the FCC to work with people who have problems. you know, and help them. And they tried to help, and there was no solving it, not really. You know, you can wrap the cords more tightly because the more cord you have exposed to the radio signal, the more likely it's going to pick up what's on that. You know, even if it's not tuned to it just by being in proximity, you can put magnets on it to dampen all this kind of stuff. Anyway, but that's not what this is. This is not that. So just, you know, one possible misconception people have is the difference between just a piece of metal and an actual powered radio tower, which this was not. It's just a 150-foot pole.
The tower that we are proposing is located at 3767 Gulf Breeze Parkway. It's zoned PBD, Planned Business District. We are requesting a 150-foot monopole cell tower. The site itself meets all FCC and FAA guidelines and regulations.
Yeah, just a 150-foot pole in an area where you have 180-foot pole maximum height, according to the regulations.
The tower itself will be structurally designed to accommodate minimum of 3 carriers, as you can see up there on day one. So SBA designs all of their sites so that they have enough space for not only on the tower, but ground space for ground equipment as well for the different carriers. Currently, Verizon Wireless is intending to be the anchor tenant. So if this tower were to get approved, they would be the first to sign on and place their equipment on the tower in order to provide better coverage.
So Verizon wants to put a cell site there. Others, I'm sure it's a good location. It's in Tiger Point. It's right at the back of the Walmart. If you actually look at an aerial map of the Walmart, there's a big wet pond on the southeast portion, basically behind Lowe's, and there's a dry pond behind the Walmart, and they wanted to put it in the dry pond, which is a very common place to put towers. You know, I know at least one of our towers, we have different ones depending on, like, the M1620 is one powered tower. The FM923 is not a powered tower because it's just a very low power repeater. The tower itself is totally fine to touch, you know, just so you understand the difference. And, you know, one of those is actually, I think it's 923, is actually in a retention pond right now, and we're moving it because of reasons. But, you know, that's a very normal place to put these things. They have a very small footprint. They do not interfere with the pond itself doing anything because it's a very small footprint that it actually occupies. Anyway, so it's a small thing that they want to put, you know, as far as the ground goes, that they want to put this in.
The area that we are planning to actually develop the tower is actually considered a dry retention area. So we are on the edge. We are not in the center of that dry retention area. Not only that, the compound itself and will be built on what we like to call a caisson. The caisson itself for the tower will be approximately 6 to 8 feet wide, and that will be the only area that encumbers the land itself.
Yeah, so it's like 50 square feet of impervious surface they're going to build this thing on. In the grand scheme of any retention pond, especially a dry one, that's nothing. I mean, that is no impact whatsoever. So, oh, this is going to flood the neighborhood. Come on now. If you built it on a, like, outfall and it was blocking the outfall, which, of course, they're not doing, maybe it would have an effect. But it's a dry pond that even, as Colton Wright mentioned, he went down there the day of this meeting and looked at it during, you know, after a massive rainstorm, and there was no water in that other than just the water that fell on that particular grass. So that's not an issue. Is it structurally sound? People worry about a big tower in their backyard.
These towers, this document, which is, again, signed and sealed by a structural engineer from the tower manufacturer themselves, have put together a document which states that this tower is structurally designed per national building code, and that this tower itself is designed to withstand speeds of 160 miles per hour. It's not only the tower that needs to be designed that way, but any and all equipment, so meaning the platforms that go on the top of the tower and the antennas that attach, have to meet that standard.
So it'll handle a Category 4. Category 5 is 157, right? So it'll handle Category 4. And if it's actually sustained Category 5 winds, I mean, it's not, like, intended to fall apart. But even if it does get torn apart by it, it falls right down on itself is the way it's specifically designed, which makes sense. You say, well, how can they plant it? Because the wires that connect to it pull down. Like, it's always under tension holding those in place. And if for some reason the tower broke, you know what would happen is it would it basically collapse on itself.
Being said, number one, it's designed in that nature. And in this letter, again, which is signed and sealed by a structural engineer, they are stating that in the event that sustained 160 mile per hour winds were to affect this tower, that that tower would collapse on itself, resulting in a zero fall radius.
And by the way, if there is 160 mile an hour winds, those houses are all flying. The tower is going to stand there and the houses around it are going to be like watching the Wizard of Oz. You know, like, so the notion that that's the issue is sort of amazing. As he said, the tower is more sound than the homes around it. They've done a study. A property appraiser says there's no impact on property values near towers, which is what people worry about. And by the way, the value to the consumer or the value to the citizens is cell service. I remember, I don't know if it was this same person, I just don't remember the person's name, but when they were talking about building a tower behind the Walmart in on Creighton, and you're like, why do they build the, you know, cell towers near Walmarts? Well, why do you think? No, seriously. I mean, it's a good chance to, like, be a creative citizen. Like, why do you think they want to build towers by Walmarts? Well, I don't know, because they got the land. Well, that's true. Yeah. Finding a willing landlord is a good part of this problem. Why else? Well, I don't know. Just because the zoning kind of fits. Yep. No, good. Good job. Yep, that's right. Zoning fits. Willing landlord. And people use them. There's lots of, if you look at the cell coverage maps, I just remember this from the Creighton Walmart discussion, is if you look at where cell service is green, yellow, and red, you know, red being bad, there's not enough cell service in that area, Walmart is always a red. Why? Because there's a lot of people in Walmart trying to use their cell phones all the time. And so they don't get on, you know, they don't get on, like, the Wi-Fi in the Walmart, which is free. They're just, you know, on their normal default, like, I'm set up to go on, you know, your data plan. Well, guess what? When you congregate hundreds of people inside a store, you get coverage problems because they're all trying to use their phones. And, you know, and so one of the reasons they like to build towers by Walmart is because it's already kind of zoned that way. It's already got that semi-industrial kind of feel to the area. And also you have a willing landlord, and also because there's demand in the Walmart and the things that are near the Walmart. So it all makes sense. So what is the Santa Rosa County Zoning Board going to do in the end? Oh, and by the way, he says there's other places they've tried. There's no more space on the water tower. You know, it's hard to find all of these things. So Colton Wright, who's, you know, the zoning board ultimately is like it's the Santa Rosa County Commission sitting as the zoning board, kind of the same way you have like the CRA is basically just the people that are on the underlying council or whatever, the city council or the county commission. Anyway, so Colton Wright.
We'll provide a couple comments, and then if we want to have some public input, we can certainly do so. I'm just going to up front state that I'm opposed to the project, but there's a reason. Hold on. You may not like everything I have to say.
Don't clap too early. Because what was interesting about this, a couple of notes. One is, before the public spoke, it was like after the presentation by the applicant, before the public spoke, Colton, knowing that if they don't do something, they're just going to have to endure an hour of people being angry at him and saying most likely bad arguments, okay, because that's what I was trying to answer a lot of those in the presentation, and he was as well. Colton says, look, you know, the things that you're upset about are not really things to be upset about. But I am interested in voting no on this. It's my district, he said, because I don't think it's a good idea to set a precedent to build these towers in even dry retention ponds. I actually disagree with Colton on this. I don't think there's any problem with this. This was a good enough location. You can say, well, we built it in this particular one because of demand in the area. It was a dry pond, whatnot. So the public is happy, you know, because they didn't want it. Nobody ever wants anything in their backyard. You're like, you want the service. You just don't want the service being infrastructure built in your backyard, which is always weird to me. I'm like, if you, you know, cell service is a good thing to have. We have in our neighborhood, it's not like right next to my house, but we have big power lines that run through the, you know, Carpenters Creek headwaters that go by my house. And we have a big Gulf, FPL substation right by our house. And you're like, why would you want to live by that? Because we always have power. It's nice. And Sally, we were out of power for like a couple of hours. It was right back up. Why? Because we live by the substation. There are advantages to living by the cell tower that you don't think about until there's an emergency. And, you know, anyway, so they're going to vote no. They're going to say, come back and work with us. Let's find another location, which he's already said is very hard to find. But I particularly liked the fact that before the public had a chance to get themselves all frenzied up, they just, which they kind of were already, they said, look, we're voting against this. If you still want to talk, it's okay. Maybe you talk yourself out of yes, but we just want to let you know we're going to vote against this, and they did. So I think it's a loss for the community. You know, you could have had better cell service. You would have had, a good thing in a good location. You're like, well, it would have been in my backyard. Okay, but your backyard is the Walmart now. I mean, you know, how beautiful is the view anyway? 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
After almost 70 years of serving the community, Tops Appliance in Milton is retiring and going out of business. That means it's time to sell everything remaining on the floor. If you've been waiting to upgrade your kitchen, replace that old washer and dryer, or add a freezer for extra storage, now is the time to make a deal. Shop a great selection of refrigerators, dishwashers, freezers, washers, dryers, and electric range ovens from the brands you know and the people you trust. Tops Appliance will remain open through the end of September or until everything's sold out. And when it's gone, it's gone. Stop in and shop, make an offer, and take home the appliances you need today. Or simply stop by, say goodbye, and share a favorite story from nearly seven decades of Tops Appliance. Tops Appliance has been honored to serve you and your families for the last 70 years. Retirement sale. Going out of business. Only at Tops Appliance. 6721 Caroline Street, downtown Milton. Open through September or until sold out.
When I hit my 50s, I felt like things were slowing down.
This is Sandra's Metamucil story.
I started taking Metamucil for digestion, but had no idea it would impact so much more. Not only did Metamucil help me feel more regular, but my heart health saw the benefits too.
Metamucil, one simple routine, four health benefits. Digestive health starts here. Go to Metamucil.com for more details.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance exists to deliver measurable results for Escambia County. Our focus is simple, growing local businesses and attracting new ones that create jobs, increase wages, and bring private investment to our community. Every project is evaluated on its ROI to taxpayers. Florida West works to ensure Escambia County remains competitive for high-value employers today and for decades to come. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
If you remember listening to this, and this, then remember this, COVID hasn't gone away. And if you're an adult with conditions like diabetes, asthma, or heart disease, it can cause serious setbacks. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about the latest COVID vaccine. It's one of the best ways to help protect yourself. Find out more at PfizerForAll.com. Pfizer, outdo yesterday.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Oh! The Kandinsky is painted on both sides.
Risky business. Interesting scene. But you gotta let it get to the guitar riff at least. Oh yeah. 5:28 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Donald Trump wants to rename New Mexico as New America. I mean, I want off the ride. But, you know, this ride is performing as advertised.
I think he's just trolling them for some reason.
Yeah, well, of course. And there was like 9 posts about this, you know, including him with the map renamed and then him putting a welcome to New Mexico sign. He'd put an America sticker up over the top of it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, good Lord. And then he had posted a thing about the entire United States, including Canada, and Mexico all colored red and white, like kind of the American flag, and calling the whole thing the United States of America, including Greenland, with the big American flag all over the whole thing. To which Iran, interestingly, responded. The Iranian embassy in Sierra Leone, of all places, posted a thing that said that had, "We fixed it for you. Finally, Canada and Mexico solved the world's biggest problem. They cut America in half east to west." And then so it's Canada is green, and then there's South Canada is all the northern states, and then Mexico is brown at the bottom, and then North Mexico is all the southern states. And then there's a little tiny portion in the southeast, which is Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, like the Mason-Dixon line down, and then the Mississippi is all the United States. I mean, I don't know. It made me laugh. You're laughing at the Iranians. I am. They're funnier than Trump, at least in this one case. 5:30 on News Radio. So, yeah, whatever. I mean, this is not going to happen. He doesn't have the power to do this one. This has to be voted on by the state itself. He cannot impose this one from on high. Oh, the convention, the Dallas Propaganda Fest, Trumpalooza, you know, or Trumpapalooza, however you prefer to say it, is starting tomorrow. 2 days of GOP rah-rah midterm. Jimmy Patronis is going. I asked him. He said, yeah, he's going both days. So not all the Republicans are going. There's a question of whether this is even a beneficial thing. I suppose poll results will tell us whether it bumped or dipped.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Canada imposing new tariffs totaling about $20 billion on U.S. goods crossing the border. It's to counter the move from President Trump, who slapped new levies on our neighbors to the north. Hurricane Lowell thrashing Hawaii. Fox Weather's Britta Merwin.
We're going to squeeze out inches of rain, and that will lead to a threat from mudslides and landslides, which we've already had reports of that on the island of Oahu.
Fox Weather's Katie Byrne joins us from Kauai.
Power is out for almost the entire island in Kauai. It is very dark, and the storm surge is moving in.
Houthi rebels backed by Iran attacked Saudi Arabia, starting fires at oil facilities, wounding at least 73 people, that from officials. The Kingdom's Energy Ministry says operations at oil facilities and utilities were temporarily suspended. Houthi-run TV reports Saudi Arabia retaliates with strikes in Yemen. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It is 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, and right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 74 degrees, and we'll get a look at our forecast from Channel 3. That's up here in just a couple of minutes. A 69-year-old Pensacola man has died after being hit by a car Monday on North W Street. FHP says the man was crossing the road near a Casey's gas station when a southbound sedan driven by a 70-year-old woman hit him. He was taken to the hospital where he later died. The driver, who was wearing a seatbelt, was not hurt in that crash. Troopers say the woman was unable to see the pedestrian in time to avoid that crash. Longtime Emerald Coast Utilities Authority Board member Walter Dale Perkins has passed away. Perkins served on the ECUA board for 32 years, first taking office all the way back in 1994. He chose not to seek re-election this year. A commemorative plaque honoring his tenure was dedicated near Pensacola Beach earlier this year. Outside of his public service, Perkins worked as a social worker, substance abuse counselor, and a local fishing boat captain. He is survived by his daughters, his mother, and seven siblings. Escambia County is set to tear down the old toll booth entering Pensacola Beach. Demolition is set to start October 11th. Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger says the $6.5 million Pensacola Beach Gateway project will replace that toll booth with a gantry system using toll-by-plate technology, cameras, and fiber optic communications. The project is aimed at improving traffic flow. Fees to access the beach aren't changing, but the county says the new system will ease congestion and improve emergency vehicle access. Well, over in Pritchard, city leaders holding a press conference later today to update the public on efforts to rebuild the Pritchard Police Department. Mayor Carletta Davis is introducing the Polyhire representative leading the search for the next Pritchard police chief. Officials say they're looking for a transformational leader focused on accountability and rebuilding public trust after the department's recent leadership troubles. Now, get ready for some construction activity downtown. A lot of the work will be across the street from Blue Wahoo Stadium. You might see some of that early construction activity starting soon, with temporary parking setups and site prep work getting underway on a major downtown development. Developers say construction will start by the end of the year on the $310 million privately financed Reverb by Hard Rock Hotel and Rhythm Loft Apartments. Full construction is expected to ramp up once that site is cleared and staging areas are in place. It's 534, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to have a small chance of some pop-up showers and thunderstorms today. 30% chance of rain. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies with a high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Wednesday, 50% chance of your showers and thunderstorms, high near 88 degrees. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 76 degrees. Going into Thursday, 70% chance of rain with a high near 88 and a low near 76. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now, we've got 74 degrees. It is partly cloudy. Our next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
If you've lived in Pensacola long enough, chances are a piece of jewelry in your life has passed through Beret. An engagement ring, a family heirloom, a necklace that needed a little extra care. For 40 years, Beret Jewelers has been the place locals bring the pieces that matter most. From custom designs to expert repairs to rings that start new stories and more, Beret does it all.
Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News.
I can't believe I'm going to say this one out loud, but here goes. The socialists got it right? Again? Zoran Mamdani, America's most hated politician. Or beloved, depending on who you ask. The socialist mayor of New York has now banned the use of AI for students up until the 8th grade. If a socialist does a good thing, you still have to give him credit for it? Yeah, you know, you still do.
Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News. Listen weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. News Radio 92.3.
Informative.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Santa Rosa Sheriff Bob Johnson. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir. Good to have you.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So you had an interesting morning because I know you live, near this area, but if you happen to be looking south off Tiger Point or Navarre, you got an interesting treat this morning.
Yeah, that was one heck of a water spout out there. And the scary part is I couldn't tell which way it was going at first. It took probably about a good minute or two to figure out it wasn't coming toward me, thank goodness. It's pretty scary.
Yeah. And I think it winds up moving kind of east to west how it looked to me. But holy smokes, man. I mean, because if it's coming at you, you're like, what do we do? And that I had not known there was anything going, but there's a pretty huge storm, at least, this morning there is. Yeah. And there's a little tiny cell of it right off Tiger Point that's like, oh, hey, how you doing there? Anyway, glad y'all are safe. Glad everybody's safe out there. We had a couple of smaller stories I want to get to before we talk to the big stuff. First one is you guys are asking for help trying to identify the person who did about $11,000 of damage to the new Soundside High School. Is that right?
Yeah, and we've got pretty good surveillance photos of them, so definitely go on our Facebook page and take a look at them. To me, he looks kind of Hispanic a little bit and younger, but yeah, they definitely just for no reason, you know, and it's so stupid. You're damaging a school, okay? What's the point of it? It's for the kids,
right.
And you're going to go in there and tear stuff up. It's just stupid.
And it was it external on doors or something like that?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was external. He never really got in the school that I know of, so.
But, you know, those things are expensive to repair, to replace, and, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Cost taxpayers money.
Absolutely. Well, the two big stories, the one since you and I last talked and then the one that's really been breaking since Friday is about DCF. But I want to, before we get to that, I want to talk about the license plate readers. You know, obviously, yeah. You and I have talked many times about this and, you know, the governor mm-hmm. puts his word out through FDOT last Monday. On Tuesday, you and Chip Simmons and Chief Winstrom and Chief Hawthorne all right around the same time basically put out releases and said, okay, we're done. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the bad part is that like most things, you know, a couple of people can ruin it for everybody. And, you know, you have some officers abusing it and other agencies around the country, and it makes us all look like that. But we had so many protocols in place that just the average officer couldn't use it. So, you know, like Joe Blow and the patrol car out there doesn't have access to it until something comes up. So, i.e., a perfect example, we got into a pursuit with a guy who killed somebody in Atlanta. This was just a couple of weeks ago. Killed somebody in Atlanta, carjacked their car. They put it into the LPRs, license plate readers. We got them, got into a pursuit, crashed them out in Escambia County, got the murder weapon on them and everything. Perfect example of, hey, this is why we need LPRs. But, you know, like I said, you have some people that abuse them, and this is where we're at. So now we don't have them. So
it feels a lot to me like the, you know, Escambia and Santa Rosa are kind of like the good kids getting punished for the few bad kids that are doing bad things at night. You know, so we got a curfew on everybody. But it also, you know, and I have my overall concerns about the abuse of this system by bad actors, as the governor talked about. But my sense of this, and you tell me if you what you think about this. I feel like DeSantis, this is kind of a knee-jerk reaction from him, and maybe not enough consultation with law enforcement about the value of them, so that instead of just playing, okay, get rid of them on state roads, he could have gone to, okay, I know I can't legally tell you to do it this way yet because the legislature has to create it, but these are the rules we want you to follow, and we're going to really quick get the legislature implementing these rules, because I assume the cameras are coming back, but with much stricter safeguards after next session.
Oh, I don't assume they're coming back at all.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't expect them to come back, to be honest with you. You know, the public outcry is such that, and I understand the governor's point of view. I mean, he's getting hammered to do something about it. So I get it. But what's going to really be bad is when a kid gets abducted and we could have found her, you know, with LPRs because they had a license plate.
Yeah.
And we don't, and the kid gets killed, and what do you say? I mean, what part of, you know, and everybody thinks basically, oh, my tag got read 85 times. Yeah, mine did too. I'm not breaking the law. Who cares? I don't understand, you know, some people getting up there going, I can't believe you're doing this. You're reading my tag. Cops read your tag every time they get behind you. They put it in their MCT, get all your info from the same database that LPRs get them. What's the difference?
Other than
they think it's you know, it's doing something else with their info, which is it's not. The database is already there. All your info is already in the same database that we get through MCT. So, but it is what it is.
It sounds like you disagree with the decision to get rid of them because of the value, but you've decided to get rid of them because of the outcry and because of what the governor said.
Yeah, well, yeah, because we know what's going to happen. I can see down the road. Basically, what's going to happen is Flock, and everybody thinks Flock's the only LPR, which they're not. Several companies make them. That's just one that we use. But they're going to end up going out of business because people think, you know, you read 1984, the Orwell thing, a big brother watching you. And I get it. I mean, I don't, you know, want some rogue cop running my information and stalking me or whatever. I mean, I get that portion of it. But, I mean, it does so much good. I think that if you keep them and then put heavy, heavy restrictions on certain people using them and only in certain situations, I mean, I would love to keep them, but I don't see it happening. Because the public, once they get, you know, their mind made up about it and their privacy is getting violated, you're not going to get them back. I mean, I don't see them coming back.
I don't think I'm overstating it when I say we're living in a society where people are highly misinformed, sometimes deliberately, like the whole like data center thing. The Wall Street Journal just reporting that a 200,000 fake account Chinese counterintelligence or intelligence operation has been pushing the AI data center panic, which does not surprise me at all. It seems like in this case, a lot of it was, you know, the socialists led this charge, but they got a lot of conservatives and libertarians along with them. But a lot of the argument against the cameras was misinformation or partial information and not a recognition of how they were used. And look, I have said I don't like them either in their current configuration, but I also hate losing the law enforcement value. Do you think that's true? Like, people are basically misinformed or underinformed about this?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think the way most people see it, I've been watching YouTube videos and people talking out against them. They think that every single cop in America has access to put information in and run their girlfriend and find their tag and blah, 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 which at some agencies that may be possible. But like at Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office, that don't happen. So basically at our agency, dispatch and major crimes and high-level supervisors can get into it, but your average deputy out there can't put information into the LPR without going through a supervisor and having a good reason to put the tag in there. So he can't say, hey, I think my wife's cheating on me. Can you put her tag in there? I mean, you can't do that at Santa Rosa, but other agencies, it may be everybody can put something in and it's not checked. And in that case, I 100% disagree with that.
You know, it's going to be interesting. Like you said, you don't think they'll come back. I'm curious to see what happens in the legislative session, frankly. The reforms that I have said would at least make me a lot more willing, you know, to support them. Because I definitely see the crime fighting value. I mean, I think this is the reason we have the decline in violent crimes across the country and locally is, I mean, this is these they work. Okay. The reforms I've suggested are the database should only maintain, like, you could have a list of open cases we're working on these licenses, okay? Everybody else gets flushed within, I don't know, 6 hours, 10 hours, something like that. And you need to have a warrant, and at the felony level or above, to query the database, unless it's a missing child, like an exigent circumstance or a missing elder. I'd feel a lot more comfortable with those in place than I feel right now. Any of those you want to add to or disagree with?
Well, the one thing I disagree with, purging them in like 6 hours, because, you know, what happens, you know, you go visit your dad who has Alzheimer's and you get there and he's gone, but he's been gone for 14, 15 hours since you last saw him, and he's in his vehicle. We could put that tag number in and go back and trace his movement and find him.
Is that common?
That way. Yeah, it does happen.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very much so. So. Other than that, yeah, no, I agree 100%. Felonies and all that only, and yeah, 100% agree with that. I don't want it abused, and that's why we put the restrictions on our camera systems. We put our restrictions in place, and, you know, just no one can get into it except through a supervisor and except for a really good reason, so...
Well, the one thing that I've said is if we are really going to go in a no LPRs state like we are basically right now, because I think they fight crime, even though I have my grave concerns, I think we're going to see a change in crime statistics over the next 6 months to a year, and that will be a case study for us to decide as a state, you know, do we really want or do we not want this trade-off in what we think of as freedom versus crime?
I'll tell you right now, criminals are extremely happy right now.
Yeah. I said the other day, I said, you know, criminals are celebrating and totalitarians are angry and sad, you know, so... let's switch gears a little bit because we just got a couple minutes, but I want to make sure to talk about this. Senator Don Gates, Senator Jason Pizzo, a couple of other senators put out this letter last week about the DCF grand jury investigation. He had a press conference on Friday. The family from Navarre got their kid back, thank God. But the grand jury was scathing about, especially District 5 for DCF. You know, failures in both directions, failure to protect kids when they should have been removed and failures to honor parents' rights when kids were removed inappropriately. All catastrophic failure across the board. But I wanted to ask you deal with DCF all the time. Your officers deal with them all the time. You tell me, what's life like on the ground?
Yeah, and that's pretty accurate in some cases. And I'll tell you this, part of the problem is these DCF investigators, they don't get paid anything. So you're not getting the cream of the crop wanting to be a DCF investigator. You're not wanting, you know, you're getting, you know, people who can't find another job basically and are barely qualified. They'll hire them. And this is who you've got making decisions about your children. So can you fix it? Yeah, you probably could. It'd take many years, but this has been ongoing. This isn't something that just happened recently.
Right.
I remember back in the 80s when I was over in Okaloosa County, we had issues with DCF doing the exact same thing. They would take kids and you're like, you're taking them for this? And then you'd have other ones and you're like, you're not taking them? What the heck? So this is not something that just happened in the last year or so.
So it seems like, I mean, it is systemic. It is, you know, the wrong people are some very good people. Okay. Absolutely. I don't want to neglect that, but you know, the wrong people, incompetent people, the money's all wrong. The challenges to the system of inadequate fosters, you know, so how do you fix it? What would be, I mean, there's a whole list of reforms that the grand jury recommended. Senator Gates has got 10 of them that he's interested in. From your point of view, how can it be better?
Yeah, I think it's not something you can cure just by throwing money at it. It would take pretty much the rebuilding of DCF from the ground up, I think. And this is just me. I'm not in that business.
Right.
I mean, we assist them and we do, you know, we get out to calls and we deal with them on calls. But
well, you get the calls when the kid didn't get the help they needed and they get hurt or they die. I mean, you get those calls.
Correct.
And, you know, so 100%. you deal with the consequences of DCF not doing their job.
Yes, exactly. And like I said, it needs to start from the ground up and just be a total rebuild, I think. And more money. And, you know, people say you can't cure a problem by throwing money at it. You can't cure it, but you can make it better. And if you save one child, you know, I mean, is it worth it? I would say yes. Of course it would be. So I mean, that's my two cents on the matter. But I think it needs a total rebuild.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate that. I hope that we do it. I really do. It's worth doing. It's worth paying to do. And you know, because as you say, we need to be saving children and protecting parental rights at the same time. And the one thing I've been saying all morning is, and look, if you're in a position where you can foster, do it. You know, if you can't, we are desperately short of foster parents that are, you know, decent. And you know, the kind of people who could do it, should do it, don't do it. And then the horrible people wind up doing it. You know, like that's the catch, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it takes a special person to be a foster parent. It really does. Just, you know, you have to have that love of humanity kind of thing going on. And I think as, you know, time goes on, at least the way I'm viewing it, and this is just me, this is, you know, the sheriff, this is Bob Johnson saying it, humanity is changing. I mean, our values, our thought processes, what's valuable to people as a whole. You know, I grew up in the 60s, and, you know, back then you took care of your neighbor. You took care of your neighbor. You took care of your relatives when they got older. All these things seem to be going by the wayside. I mean, it just, and maybe it's just me seeing it. I don't know.
No, there was, we actually just watched the movie with Ryan Reynolds, May Day, over the weekend, where he's in Russia. And Kenneth Branagh, the Russian guy, they go and they basically stop at a house and get accommodations overnight because he asked. And Ryan Reynolds is shocked about this. And, you know, and Kenneth Branagh, well, you know, in America, if a stranger shows up at your door in need of help, you obviously help them. And Ryan Reynolds pausing because we all know the answer is no. He's like, oh, of course we do. You know, like, but that's, you know, there is that kind of communal orientation, that willingness to help and be generous. And I just don't think we can say it enough that the foster system needs volunteers, you know, loads of them. Yeah. And so if you're interested at all or willing at all, you know, go find out more. Sheriff Bob Johnson, Center for the Sheriff, as always, sir, thank you so much for the time. And always thank you for keeping us safe and keeping us informed. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew. Take care.
Absolutely. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. You know, it's interesting. The one of the things the sheriff said early on in our conversation about the flock cameras is, you know, the rogue cop. You know, I'm not really worried about the rogue cop. That's, I mean, you know, there's occasionally going to be police officers who misuse whatever technology you give them. You know, that's actually not the one that worries me. I know that's what a lot of people bring up. You know, these cops are tailing their, or, you know, surveilling their wives and girlfriends or whatever, or their boyfriends and whatever. Okay. Yeah. But that's, again, that's not really the one that worries. What I'm worried about is government, you know, big G. I'm worried about a surveillance system that allows the government to decide that, you know, going to church isn't allowed. Or, you know, going out to eat isn't allowed. Or going to a rally isn't allowed. And I'm also worried in that circumstance about the possibility that, you know, law enforcement officers decide to side with the government on violating your rights. You say, well, that couldn't happen. Yeah, tell that to every place it's ever happened. And, you know, it's hard to see a future where that kind of stuff could become a reality, but that's because nobody sees it becoming a reality until after it's too late. You know, there would have been a time in Russia where they thought, you know, Russian communist revolution, people getting, you know, murdered in the gulags, that could never happen here. You know, there's probably a time in China where they thought, ah, you could never have tanks running down a guy, you know, and stopping a student protest. I mean, like, everywhere there's ever been totalitarianism, there was always a time prior to that when people thought, oh, that could never happen here. You always have to imagine it could happen here because people are manipulable and they don't know a lot and they, you know, comply with the orders of authority. Look at Stanley Milgram's experiments in obedience to authority. I mean, it's, you know, you want to think it cannot happen here. It can always happen here is how you have to think about it. And so you have to defend against the possibility in a very unlikely place like here that it could happen. That's the idea. Hey, if you need that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great selection of good quality used cars. You know, they've been serving people for almost 30 years now. And if you figure they sell about half their inventory, 150 to 200 cars out of, which is half of what they have in the lot every month, that means a couple thousand cars a year they sell, which means over the course of time, that's like a lot of cars, you know, 30 years selling a couple thousand cars a year is a lot of cars. That means that when you're driving around, there's been 40, 50, 60,000 cars in this area sold by Frontier Motors. That's why you see the bumper stickers. That's why you see the license plate frames. That's why people talk about them as a place to go back again and again because, you know, guess what? They treat you well. They make you feel not icky about a process that often makes you feel icky. Frontier Motors serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Tune in today at 10 to the Pensacola Expert Panel. Angela Sherrill and Will Maben, realtors with Cannell & Company Realty, will be sharing insights on today's market, what buyers and sellers need to know right now, with emphasis on the benefits of including a home warranty in your contract. They'll be joined by special guest Michelle Bragg with Guard Home Warranty. You'll learn how to keep your entire home safe with a comprehensive home warranty. That's today at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Don't miss it.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
You're not looking for an argument. You just want to know what's going on.
And that's a good thing.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
What's cooking good looking?
Your fly's undone.
Hey, Spaz. I was watching you. Looked like you had a chance there for a second.
World in which Bill Murray is the camp guidance counselor. A world I want to live in, honestly. 558 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Interesting, you know, article, column, whatever you want to call it, opinion piece written by Juan Williams on the Tuskegee University dress code. Remember we talked about this a couple weeks ago? It made transgressors, which is a, if you're not familiar with that, that's a segment I do on Fridays at 6:20 and 8:20. The early service is 6:20, the late service is 8:20, where we talk about things that week that got canceled or that wokeism and liberalism are doing that, you know, woke Andrew, brother Andrew wants to celebrate. In any case, in this case, you know, the Tuskegee University, they've put in a dress code this year. It's you know, it's a historically black college university. And so they're telling them, don't wear do-rags, don't wear sexy clothes, you know, all of the things that you see kids misbehaving and wearing, and turn off your cell phones in class and wear business attire and all of this, a professionalism kind of idea. And Juan Williams is like, good, thank God, finally. You know, somebody is telling these young black kids, this is Juan Williams, a black guy, these young black kids, don't embrace the stereotypes that came from jailhouse-inspired fashion. That's a self-imposed handicap. Feeding negative, ugly assumptions, tying you to black people to crime, tying young black people to crime and violence is a self-imposed handicap. You're putting yourself at a disadvantage in the world by doing this. And that's the reality. That's what, and the university says, you know, we're trying to prepare people for success. This is one way we can do it. He says, Juan Williams, right, standards are not racist. Discipline is not disrespectful of black culture. Black lives do matter. All of these things matter, and you get yourself in a weird place when you argue against them on behalf of black people.
Local news every hour, and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.